Chapter 17. Cornelia. Los Angeles, December 1923. Setting Evangeline Murray on the road to fame and fortune had not gone as smoothly as Cornelia had expected. She really needed Iris's advice, but Iris refused to give any. Iris had taken herself off to some sort of clinic or hospital, or maybe it was a convent. Cornelia was uncertain of the details. All she knew was that Iris was away somewhere, dealing with her crisis of conscience caused by that point-blank shooting of John Murray. "I knew it was the right thing to do," she had said to Cornelia. "But, well, sometimes I don't." "Don't what?" Cornelia asked. "Know if it was the right thing," Iris replied, before piling her suitcases into a chauffeur-driven car and setting off for somewhere in the Appalachians or the Adirondacks, or maybe it was the Swiss Alps. Cornelia really couldn't spend time absorbing the details. She had far more important things to do. The first thing was to get Evangeline away from Canada and away from the Canadian reporters. Cornelia suspected that if Evangeline so much as glimpsed the pictures that were spread across the front page of the Canadian papers, the whole future of the women's freedom movement would be under threat. The Canadians were apparently more interested in the grainy photographs of Joshua McLaren hanging from a cable above the falls than they were in the smiling and uninjured Evangeline Murray waving goodbye from the train station. They weren't even printing pictures of Evangeline being released from the barrel. Instead, the image featured an indistinct picture of Danny McLaren towing the barrel ashore, and the detail that two of his toes had been amputated as a result of his immersion in the cold water, and the fuss they made about Joshua McLaren deliberately breaking his own leg. Cornelia knew that she could never let Evangeline know anything about that. Her plan was simple. Keep Evangeline away from talking directly to reporters and keep her away from the newspapers until the initial hysteria had died down and the press could once again concentrate on Evangeline's historic exploit rather than the woes of the McLaren family. The whistle-stop tour certainly helped. Cornelia shepherded Evangeline and the barrel through appearance after appearance, being sure that Evangeline could do little more than wave and smile and wear the infamous bathing suit. Cornelia made the speeches. Cornelia made the bookings. Cornelia made the travel arrangements, and Cornelia moved Evangeline as rapidly as she could from the Canadian border. They went into the Deep South to rally the ladies of Dixie. They moved across the Midwest, appealing to farmers' wives. They ferried the barrel across the Rockies and stirred up women on remote ranches. And finally, they arrived in California, the place where Evangeline was to receive her movie contract. That was the plan. But it didn't seem to be happening the way Cornelia had planned it, and she found herself desperately hoping that Iris would soon return from wherever she had secluded herself. She needed Iris. She needed Iris's checkbook. The triumphant tour had not brought in a great deal of money. The hotel suite in Hollywood was costing a fortune, and now it turned out that the agent who was to give Evangeline her screen test wanted to be paid in advance. Cornelia sent an urgently worded telegram addressed to Iris at the headquarters of the Devere and Portnoy Empire. "Come at once or send money. Stop. Cannot continue. Stop." Evangeline, Los Angeles. Someone was knocking on the door of the suite Evangeline shared with Cornelia, which was highly inconvenient as Evangeline was in the bath and Cornelia was at the opposite end of the large suite, immersed in paperwork. "If we don't answer, they'll go away," Evangeline thought, and sank back into the perfumed bubbles. She was tired to the point of exhaustion. Who would have thought that preparing for a screen test would be more exhausting than going over Niagara Falls in a barrel? Of course, they had been traveling nonstop for the past 6 months, and she was lonely. She missed her boys. There had been no word from either of them since Cornelia had rushed her to the train station, and they had set off on their exhausting journey into fame and fortune. Fame and fortune was not as enjoyable as she had expected, Evangeline thought, trying to relax her aching muscles. She'd been massaged by a fierce Nordic woman, had her face painted at Max Factor, and her hair crimped into a Marcel wave at a fashionable Hollywood salon. Her fingernails and toenails were painted red, and her teeth had been whitened. She felt as though there was nothing left of herself. She was now a creature wholly constructed by Cornelia, awaiting a screen test that seemed likely never to happen. The banging on the door grew considerably louder, and Evangeline stepped out of the bath and cracked open the door to see what was going on. She saw Cornelia stomping impatiently from the second bedroom. "Who is it?" Cornelia shouted. "Whoever you are, you're not coming in. I'm going to call the manager." It's me, an equally loud but higher-pitched voice shouted through the door. It's Iris. Cornelia stood stock still. Evangeline saw her take a deep breath and step back from the door. What do you want? Cornelia asked. I want to come in, Iris said. How do I know it's really you? Cornelia asked. Bang, bang, you're dead, said the Iris voice. Cornelia took another step back. Where have you been? She shouted through the door. Do you want my money or don't you? Iris shouted back. Evangeline shrugged into a terrycloth robe and hurried out of the bathroom. What are you doing? She asked, pushing past Cornelia. Let her in. It's Iris. She brushed Cornelia aside and flung the door open. Iris, she cried, where have you been? All other questions died before they were even born. This was indeed Iris, but so very different. She was without a hat, and her hair was cut brutally short. She wore a simple tan dress and brown shoes. She was standing up straight and looking Evangeline in the eye. I might say the same to you, she said, pushing her way into the room. So you got my telegram, Cornelia said. Come at once or send money, Iris quoted. How could I resist? I assume things are not going exactly as you planned. It's taking longer than I expected, Cornelia admitted. And it seems that Evangeline might not be movie star material. Apparently, she doesn't have the sparkle they're looking for. I'm sure it's hard to sparkle with a guilty conscience, Iris said enigmatically. She gave Evangeline a fierce glance. I've worked out my demons, she said. How are you doing with yours? What demons? Evangeline asked. It's not my fault that I'm not what they seem to want in Hollywood. Apparently, it's not enough that I risked my life and became the heroine of the women's freedom movement. I don't have any demons, Iris. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm doing my best, and my conscience is clear. Really? Iris said. What about the McLarens? I don't know what you mean, Evangeline said. Please, Iris, come in and sit down. Where have you been? We haven't heard a word from you, and nothing from my boys, nothing even from Danny. I've missed you all so much. Iris plopped herself down on one of the satin-striped chairs and looked at Evangeline, assessing her. It's possible, she said, that you really don't know the truth. Tell me, Evangeline, have you read any of the newspaper stories out of Canada? No, I missed them, Evangeline said. We were so busy traveling at first, and by the time I asked for back issues, Cornelia couldn't find any. Couldn't she? Said Iris. I'm not surprised. I've been keeping Evangeline away from the reporters, Cornelia said. We all agreed that it would be better for her to be a woman of mystery. Iris sprang up from the chair and walked over to confront Evangeline eye to eye. You want to know where I've been? Well, I'll tell you. I've been in a convent in Toledo, trying to come to terms with the fact that I shot a man. Specifically, I shot your husband. I know you shot him, Evangeline told her. I really don't know what to say. If I say I'm sorry, I'm a liar. I wanted him gone. Because you wanted Joshua McLaren, Iris said. She did not want any such thing, said Cornelia. The very idea. Evangeline wanted what we all want for her. Fame, fortune, and to represent the women of the United States. Iris ignored her partner. Evangeline, she said, since you left Niagara Falls, have you even once asked what has happened to Joshua and Danny and Nell? No, said Evangeline, of course I haven't. When I left, Danny was nowhere in sight. Nell had run away, and Joshua was drunk as a skunk and couldn't even hold his head up and look me in the eye. Why should I ask after any of them? They let me down, Iris. You know they did. Of course they did, Cornelia interrupted. Stop talking like this, Iris. We need to help Evangeline to keep calm and work on her, sparkle, whatever that is. But we need money. It's costing a fortune and we're behind with our payments. What I really need you to do is make a payment to our agent so that we can get on with a screen test. After that, everything will be fine. It will be just as we planned it. No, said Iris. Evangeline has to get a dose of the truth. And sometimes the truth is painful to hear. And sometimes it will interrupt your beauty sleep. And maybe Evangeline won't even look her best. And maybe she'll lose what sparkle she has left. But at least she'll know the truth. Iris reached into her capacious purse and brought out a folded newspaper. I assume that no one showed you this. Evangeline saw that it was a Canadian newspaper with a blazing headline, Heroes of the Falls.
Heroes, she said.
Men, Cornelia snorted.
Yes, said Iris, men. If you read on, and if you look at the photographs inside, you'll find that you were not the hero of the day.
Of course she was, said Cornelia.
Be quiet and let me look, said Evangeline.
She retreated into her bedroom and read the words that Cornelia obviously did not want her to read. She looked at the grainy photographs. One was the indistinct shape of Joshua McLaren hanging from a cable above the falls, and the other was Danny McLaren, floundering in the whirling waters at the base of the cataract. She took a good look at herself in the mirror. The new hairstyle, the red nail polish, the flawless skin, and no sparkle. Of course there was no sparkle. How could she sparkle after what she'd done? She walked back into the sitting room where Cornelia and Iris were glaring at each other.
I wasn't a heroine, she said. I didn't do anything. I've been a complete fool. I just sat there in the barrel while people risked their lives to save me.
They didn't have to do that, Iris. They should have left me. I never meant to hurt anyone else. I never thought...
None of us ever thought, Iris assured her. It's not you that I blame, Evangeline. You were greedy, but not as greedy as Cornelia.
And as for me, I was greedier than all of you. I knew it was wrong, but I just kept going. All I wanted was friends and something to believe in.
All I wanted was money, said Evangeline.
Well, be quiet, all of you, Cornelia snapped. I knew there'd be a whole lot of weeping and wailing if I told Evangeline about this, so I made sure that she didn't know. And now we've reached our goal, Iris will give us the money for the screen test. Once you're a star, Evangeline, you'll forget all about those silly little people in Canada.
Forget about them, Evangeline said, feeling tears pricking at her eyes.
Look at what they did for me. Oh my God, the nurse with the hot water bottles and the blankets. That was for Danny. He was the one with hypothermia. And Joshua. Poor Joshua, he fell on the floor and I didn't even try to help him. I called him a drunk.
Do you know anything else, Iris? Are they okay?
They're getting better, Iris said. Danny's back to his usual cheerful self, or so I'm told. And Mr. McLaren's leg is healing. He can walk a little, now.
Who told you all this? Cornelia asked.
Nell McLaren. She wrote to me. She didn't understand why none of us had ever asked about Danny and Joshua. She called us some pretty harsh names. And that's when I realized that Cornelia was keeping it all from you, Evangeline.
It was in her best interest, Cornelia said.
And another item of news, Iris said with a strange little smile. Nell has gone to Toronto with Maddie Ferguson.
Whatever for? Cornelia asked.
So he can get better treatment for his lungs. And then she's going to marry him.
The world's gone mad, Cornelia declared, but it doesn't change our purpose.
No, Evangeline agreed. It doesn't change our purpose. If I stop now, then everything everyone did was for nothing.
But we must do something, Iris. I have to write and apologize, and perhaps we could send some money. You know, something to help them with their medical expenses. I mean, if Joshua can't walk...
She paused, unable to continue. She tried to imagine Joshua as an invalid, unable to walk. How would he manage if he couldn't get down to his beloved boatyard? How would he manage without Nell to look after him?
He can walk, Cornelia said. Iris said so much herself, and broken legs heal in time.
But I must write and explain, Evangeline said. You don't understand how badly I behaved.
I said such horrible things. And he didn't say a word. Nothing.
Don't write, said Iris. Go yourself. Go and explain. You owe him that much.
Evangeline shook her head. I can't go. He doesn't want me. I don't know why he went to such lengths to save me. Maybe it was his sense of duty, but it wasn't personal. I wrote to him, Iris. I swear I did. I gave him every chance, and he never answered me. He read the letter. That's what Maddie said. He read it, but he never answered. That's why I went on with the whole stupid thing. Right up until the last minute, I still thought he would stop me.
No, Iris. It's no good me going up there in person. It will just embarrass him.
Don't even think about leaving here, Cornelia interrupted.
We've waited 3 months for this screen test, and you're going to have it, and you're going to be a star.
The choice is yours, said Iris. I have money for the screen test, or I have money for a ticket to Canada. What do you want, Evangeline?
Don't even think about throwing yourself away on that great illiterate lout of a man, Cornelia said.
Illiterate, said Iris. What do you mean by illiterate?
I mean he can't read, said Cornelia. What else would I mean? I realized it as soon as we tried to get him to sign the first contract.
He had no idea what he was looking at.
Danny was trying to cover it up by saying that he didn't have his spectacles, but that has nothing to do with it. Believe me, I know an illiterate when I see one, and that man is illiterate.
He can't read? Evangeline queried again.
That's right, said Cornelia, he can't read.
Do you want to throw yourself away on a man like that?
Oh, yes, said Evangeline, her heart skipping with joy. That's exactly what I want to do.
She grabbed Iris and hugged her.
He can't read, she said. He can't read, Iris repeated.
They hugged again with tears streaming down their faces. The world's gone mad, said Cornelia. Evangeline hesitated.
But I still don't know for sure, she said to Iris.
We never know for sure, said Iris.
It's a risk you'll have to take. Just think of the risk he took for you. Pack your things. You can catch the night train.
Joshua. The short December day was drawing to a close. Joshua, having limped down to the landing, looked across a wasteland of pack ice. Nothing moved on the river. No seagulls, no game birds, no boats. Even the water itself was still and as gray and as dark as the sky,
with not a leaf in sight.
Up above at the falls, the ice bridge was forming early, for this had been an unusually cold December. Hardy winter tourists dared each other to walk out onto the bridge that would eventually form all the way across the river as the rainbow spray itself froze. Moving slowly and painfully, Joshua had cut a hole in the ice, and now he dangled a hook and line into the depths of the cold river. Even with his slowly healing leg, there was work he could be doing at the boat shed, but this morning he felt a need to clear his head and try to banish his overwhelming sense of desolation. He heard a car with chains on the wheels coming down the hill. The road had been plowed a few days before, but still very little traffic moved. He stood up, leaning heavily on his cane, and looked down the road. A Niagara Falls taxicab had pulled up at the front door of his house. Surely not a tourist, he thought. He didn't want to cope with a tourist today, and with Nell away in Toronto, he certainly couldn't take in guests. Perhaps it was just another of those pesky reporters. But he strongly doubted it because his refusals to give interviews had been so vehement that they now gave him a wide berth. The passenger was a woman. She paid off the cab driver and stood at the side of the road as the cab pulled away. There's confidence for you, he thought, so certain that she could get a welcome in the McLaren house that she'd sent away her ride back into town. Well, that was her bad judgment, and none of his business. He decided to ignore her, whoever she was, and whatever she wanted, and return to his fishing. She could knock at his door for as long as she liked, but eventually she would have to walk down to the post office and call another cab. He looked up again after a few minutes. She wasn't knocking at his door. She was walking down towards the landing.
Obviously, she had spotted his presence there, a lone figure on the dock.
She was walking slowly and carefully, picking her way in high-heeled shoes across a wasteland of ice and snow. He turned his back again.
If he ignored her, perhaps she would go away.
What sort of fool woman would come out here this time of day with no hat and no boots? She deserved to freeze to death. He stared down into the hole in the ice where nothing moved or disturbed his line. He sighed. He'd have to do something about her. She might not even know there was a telephone at the post office. She might wander around in the snow all night. She might fall over and break a bone trying to reach the landing. He reeled in his hook and picked up the bait bucket and turned to face her.
Evangeline!
It was a cry from the depths of his heart. He'd imagined this so often, imagined that she'd come back one day, if only to revisit the scene of her triumph. But not like this. She was suntanned and beautiful, and tears were streaming down her face. How's the fishing? She asked.
Not much good, he replied.
And your leg?
It's getting better.
Good. She was silent for a moment. He stared at her. What did she want? Why was she standing out here in the snow? I understand, she said reluctantly, that you have a letter you haven't read. His heart skipped a guilty beat. Oh, yes, he had a letter. Or what used to be a letter. It was now a soggy scrap of paper that he kept in his shirt pocket. The turquoise ink had run in blotches across the page. If the letters had ever been legible, that was no longer the case. No one would ever know what it said. Could I read it for you? She asked. It's too late, he replied. Don't say that, Evangeline begged. Please don't say that. No one can read it now, he insisted. I can, she said. I know what it said. You do? Yes, she replied, I do. Time stood still for a moment, and then she stepped out of her shoes and ran towards him on bare feet.
You'll freeze to death, lassie, he said, and dropping the bait bucket, the fishing pole, and his cane, he gathered her into his arms.
Her hands and face were cold as ice, but her lips and her tears were warm and welcoming. They clung together, holding each other up.
At the brink of the falls, a massive ice floe drifting down from Lake Erie rammed itself into the stern of the barge, breaking its grip on the riverbed and pushing it even closer to the brink. The metal plates twisted and screamed against each other. Silently and swiftly, another ice floe locked itself into place, and the ice dam across the river was finally formed. The river stopped flowing. The cloud of spray died away. The great thunder was silenced. And far below, for a brief season, the whirlpool stood still.
You have been listening to Whirlpool by Eileen Enright Hodgetts. Copyright 2011 by Eileen Enright Hodgetts. Production copyright 2016 by Emerge Publishing.